Welcome to Investigative Post's Money and Politics. I'm Jeff Kelly, government and politics reporter with Investigative Post, and I'm talking with Ken Cruley, who researches and produces Money and Politics. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me here.
As our podcast name suggests, we talk about who bankrolls our politicians and why. The primaries are June 22nd, very soon, and today we're looking at the latest campaign finance filings by candidates for local offices. And we'll start with the candidates for mayor of Buffalo. This should be one of the primary season's marquee races, but it has been disarmingly quiet. And maybe that's the incumbent strategy. I don't know. We'll talk about that. But let's start with the money. Let's look at the three candidates: the incumbent Byron Brown, seeking his fifth term, his main challenger, India Walton, and then a third candidate, LaCandace Durham. And let's start with Brown. You looked at his campaign finance filings, the 31-day pre-primary filings. What did they reveal to you? What did you see?
What I saw is from January through mid-May, the mayor's campaign raised a little under $179,000, spent a little under $77,000. They still had, at that point, $274,000 in the bank, and the mayor's campaign's probably still raising additional money. The interesting thing about the filings is that, and not surprising thing, is that people who work in City Hall are very generous contributors to the mayor. Looks like somewhat over 100 donors coming from City Hall, probably a few more than that. Probably talking about $55,000 or $60,000, and out of the 178, so almost a third of the money was raised right from City Hall.
The average donation from those employees was about $500. The most was like $2,000. That's if you're a commissioner. You know, mm-hmm. That your tribute is a little higher than.
$600 was a very popular number.
Where else is he raising money from?
Well, maybe you start by saying where he's not raising it from. In past campaigns for mayor, unions, both public employee unions and outside unions, have been heavy contributors to a mayoral campaign. I can only see a couple that I can identify in the most recent filings who contributed a total of $1,300 or $1,400. So where are the unions in the mayor's contributions? Likewise, developers, who you would normally think would be very anxious to contribute, there are some that donated a few thousand dollars. Paul Simonelli, James Sandaro, a few others, Natalie Building, but not a whole lot.
And no, in the previous year there have been more, but in this period far less.
I mean, even the total amount that they've raised, they had in the bank something under $125,000 in January, I believe. They raised another $178,000. $300,000 for a mayoral campaign in Buffalo.
This is a mayor who has spent $1 million on reelection regularly. How's he spending the money?
$9,700 to an outfit that made his signs. $7,400 to the Buffalo News. Another printer, $5,300. The State Democratic Committee, $4,500. Nothing particularly unusual. A lot of nickel and dime things. Coffee for the volunteers and things like that. Some office supplies. No TV, at least as of the report that was filed on May 21st. Other than signs and some brochures or stuff, there isn't a whole lot of that sort of activity going on.
It seems as if Brown's campaign strategy is to pretend as if there isn't a campaign at all, as if there isn't a race. It's as if he wants people to forget that there is a choice coming up.
That's clearly the strategy, and so far it's working. League of Women Voters and some other organizations announced a debate, a Zoom debate, unfortunately, but a debate for the mayoral candidates, of which there are three. They say that as long as two show up, they'll proceed. India Walton and LaCandace Durham have said they're going to be there, so there'll be a debate of sorts on Zoom. But the mayor, at least as of a couple of days ago when I last checked, hadn't responded. That's probably the easiest thing to do in a campaign like this, because an hour and a half debate with three candidates means you have to talk for 20 or 30 minutes. Not a big deal.
Right, and it draws attention to the fact that you have opponents. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. Well, let's talk about India Walton. Let's talk about her campaign finances. How do they look? How's she doing in terms of raising money?
Well, in the most recent period, she raised about $83,000. That's the period from January to May. Prior to that, she filed with about $11,000. So she's raised, at least through middle of May, about $94,000. Press reports say she's over $100,000 total. As of the middle of May, she had about $53,000 left. Her expenses are relatively small, although there are some four-figure donors, $1,000, $2,000. There's a $5,000 donor in the list. The dollar amount total is good for a challenger, but it's not overwhelming and certainly not intimidating if you're the mayor's campaign looking at that.
Let's talk about Walton's campaign filing. There, you noted two shortcomings in her filing, technical
right.
shortcomings. Tell me what they were.
Well, the two that I'm drawing attention to is that the most recent filing, which reported $83,000 of filing, almost none of the individual contributors had their address listed. It said the United States. The United States is not an address. The state law requires a name and an address to be filed. I understand that they're claiming that there was a snafu with the State Board of Elections, and I'm certainly willing to give some credit to that because we are aware of the State Board of Elections screwing up a number of things.
It took the mayor's filing a week to appear online because the Board of Elections right. themselves acknowledged they were having technical problems. Yeah. And so, yeah, so the Walton campaign says that they had trouble in the week before the deadline and that they're working with the Board of Elections to amend the filing to include addresses.
That's good, and we'll see what they file when they file the amendment. However, I've looked at a whole lot of filings for this period. I didn't see one other campaign that had any problem getting addresses into the reports.
I didn't see that particular issue
either.
So
I guess we'll see what they file when they file it. The other issue is a very large amount of cash being unitemized donations, it's technically called. It's in the most recent filing over $20,000 out of the 83 that they reported. If you combine the two filings the campaign has done, 26% of the money they raised is unitemized. And they're claiming, I guess, that it's because it's not required under $99 contributions. I've never seen a campaign file that large a amount of unitemized deductions. It seems to me that there's some value in listing a lot of donations if the people gave $10 because it just builds the list of contributors. Really curious about that. I don't know really what the answer is or whether we'll ever find out why that number is so big.
Yeah, they're just arguing the $20,000 is the aggregate of people who gave $99 or less, which could be a selling point, right? You could say, like, look at how many people, at least 200, maybe many more, who gave $99 or less, small donors, a groundswell,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to...
Yeah, it seems to me a bragging point that you'd want to publicize.
Who knows? Maybe they're protecting their donors. Maybe some of them work in City Hall. Let's talk about Lacandice Durham. Lacandice Durham works in City Hall. Her candidacy seems to be limited so far to appearing occasionally at online forums about various civic matters and engaging in conversations with people. I haven't seen much else. Have you? Have you seen a filing?
I haven't. There's no filings, which if it's a candidate, the law again says if you raise or spend more than $50 on a campaign, you have to have a filing. So I'll take it for what it's worth that she hasn't done that, there's nothing there. And I've seen no press or anything that indicates that there's a campaign going on there.
It is unclear what her role in the campaign is. And she has not clarified that for us. It could be that she's there simply to siphon votes away from India Walton.
That could be. But if that's the case, she's not doing it very effectively. So.
No. Let's talk about some of the other significant primaries that are going to take place on June 22nd. Probably the most interesting is the race for Erie County Sheriff. We've got primaries in both the Democrat and the Republican Party.
Very unusual to see that, particularly with the Republicans.
Especially
Democrats
on the
like
Republican
to run primaries,
side. Yeah.
You do have two Republicans in the Republican primary. The Democrats have three candidates in the Democratic primary, Brian Gould, Kim Beatty, and Miles Carter. There was a debate held recently. Only the Democrats showed up, even though the Republicans were invited. So there's an active campaign going there, too, no clear picture yet of how that might come out. Then there is also a fellow named Ted DiNoto, who's a Amherst police officer or lieutenant, I believe. He's decided not to run in primaries, and he's just going to run as an independent. not to be confused with some of the other candidates who are running in the primaries, who are also trying to get independent lines to back them up if they win or lose the party primary. So right now we have six people running for sheriff, and in November we could have six.
That's right. They're all creating these independent lines, or trying to. Yeah. They've filed petitions, and some of those petitions are being challenged. But yeah, it's an interesting, the proliferation of parties, sort of one-off parties, that are created for a single election, and then
the other interesting thing with the Republicans is that the endorsed candidate Karen Healy Case is also endorsed by the Conservative Party. If Case were to lose the Republican primary to John Garcia, she'll still be on the ballot in November as the Conservative Party candidate, and so there'll be two Republicans basically there. What the Republicans have done in other cases like that is found a judicial race for somebody to run in New York City on the conservative line to get things straightened out. But Case is not a lawyer, so that's not an option. And so there are only limited other options to get her off the ballot, and they could be stuck with having two Republicans in November. Beatty is filing independent petitions. So she could survive if Gould beats her in the Democratic primary. So it's still going to be complicated right through November.
On the Democratic side, you have Gould as the endorsed candidate, Cheektowaga assistant police chief, and then you have Kim Beatty, African-American woman from the city. In the primary is when city voters come out, if they're going to come out at all. So that helps Beatty and hurts Gould. Mm-hmm. She could pull off, based on that, because there's a mayoral race in the city, that could be enough to push her past Gould.
Very important point, because in the city you have, besides the sheriff's race, which goes into the city, you have the mayor's race, you have five people running for three city judgeships. You've got a lot of activity going on in the suburbs. There's a primary in the Democratic Party for supervisor in the town of Hamburg, and not a whole lot else. The big towns don't have Democratic primaries, and so there's nothing to draw people out. They're not probably going to come out just for a sheriff race, most of those folks. And so the vote in the city, it gets magnified because of the activity that's going on with the mayor and with the judgeship.
And then gets diminished in November when basically the city's elections are determined and people
which
stay
has
home.
Traditionally hurt Democratic countywide candidates then, because people aren't paying attention. And so that, yeah, it does have ramifications.
And then on the Republican side, you know, I still do not quite understand how Karen Healy Case pulled off this jujitsu and got the early endorsement from Republicans and conservatives, particularly when John Garcia came into the race with more money. And it seems like pretty broad support among Republicans. And Tim Howard, the incumbent.
The sheriff notified me directly about his support for John Garcia. Actually, the Conservative Party endorsed Case first, and what the Republicans were doing was trying to encourage the conservatives to do that so that they could then go to their fellow Republicans and say, look, Case is going to have the conservative line, so you really don't want to.
So stand down.
Right.
Let's not act like Democrats and fight.
Some Republicans didn't get the message. State Senator Pat Gallivan, a former sheriff, is also supporting John Garcia. So he comes to the battle with a lot of political support. He's raised more money, or about the same money when you count his personal donation as well as what he's raised. So he's competitive dollar-wise. Republicans don't run countywide primaries, and they also don't have any primaries to speak of around the county. And so how they're going to encourage their people to come out for their endorsed candidates will be a really interesting story.
Ken, we're going to get one more glimpse at candidates' finances before the primary. Is that right?
Right. On June 11th, filing is required. If they follow the pattern from the one due on May 21st, we'll be lucky to see them before primary day. We are due for one more report, and that will cover the period from mid-May through the beginning of June.
Okay. Well, in any case, whether they're available to us or not, you and I will discuss them in the studio probably next week.
Yes, sir.
That's Money in Politics for this week, Ken. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate being here.
You can follow Ken Crooley's work at politicsandstuff.com, and of course, keep coming back to investigativepost.org for our deep coverage of issues of importance to Western New York.